Along with presenting the story of the life of American military hero Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, the Oscar-nominated Clint Eastwood-directed film American Sniper brings with it a look at the many ways war impacts the people who are called on to serve in it. My next guest has seen that impact way too often as a journalist, as he watched and reported on men and women whose lives are either permanently changed and scarred or ended, often by their own hands, way too early. He shares the stories of success and tragedy from the war in Afghanistan in his book Dead Men Risen, an epic story of war and heroism in Afghanistan. He's the Washington Bureau Chief of the Sunday Times of London, Toby Harnden. Good morning, Toby.
Hi, good to be with you.
And it's TobyHarnden.com on the web. The in the beginning of Dead Men Risen, you introduce the story and you give a quick background before you get the reader into the story. And you mention how some of the names in Dead Men Risen are pseudonyms for people, actual real-life troops who you talked with who didn't want their names used or couldn't have their names used for whatever the reason. Was Chris Kyle one of those? Had you had the chance to talk with Chris over the years in your coverage?
No, Chris Kyle wasn't one of them. But there were a number of people in Dead Men Risen, some people who'd suffered psychologically or sort of succumbed to battle shock out there in theater, that I felt that without their explicit agreement, it wouldn't be helpful to them and, you know, sort of rebuilding their lives to sort of name them. So that was the reason for that. Chris Kyle I interviewed in 2012, about 9 months before he was killed. And we talked about what it meant to be a sniper, And in Dead Men, in fact, we discussed a couple of the snipers in Dead Men Risen who... there were two that featured very prominently who killed 75 Taliban in the space of 40 days, which was, you know, a hell of a kill rate, you know, on a par with Chris Kyle, really, if they'd, you know, been there for longer. And he talked to me about the sort of specific role of the sniper, the sort of the mentality of the sometimes very long range kill where you're quite a distance away, but it's very intimate. Because you can see exactly what you're doing, and you have to make these sort of life or death decisions, which also, as is portrayed in American Sniper, have a sort of a legal sort of ramification. Like if you get it wrong and you shoot a civilian, then you could be up before some kind of military court. So Chris Kyle was sort of one of the brotherhood of soldiers, and really Dead Men Risen is about that sort of broader brotherhood of soldiers as well. You know, soldiers from other countries, in this case mainly British soldiers in Dead Men Risen, but also soldiers through the ages.
You mentioned Kyle's accuracy from a distance. I think his longest recorded shot was 2,100 yards, killing the insurgent with one shot. That's how fine of a shot Kyle was.
Right, absolutely. And now most of the shots weren't that distance, He said there was a degree of luck in that shot. Now, of course, some of that is modesty. But there was this. In fact, what Chris Kyle said about that shot was very similar to what a guy who in Dead Men Risen called Corporal Fitzgerald said, which was that it was outside. I think it was, in both cases, the actual shot, the target was outside the range of the weapon. And so then, what you're doing there at that point is you're really operating almost on intuition, because you've got to judge the wind, you know, the kind of the atmosphere. You just have a sort of a sense that you need to make certain adjustments, and then you fire the shot. And the chances are, you know, I don't know, 1 in 10, 1 in 100, you might miss. But I mean, on certain occasions, and that occasion with Chris Kyle, it was one of those occasions where he judged it just right. And maybe, who knows? You know, he might have said, you know, there was a bit of God involved in it, you know, a bit of fate, and it hit the target and took the target out.
In Dead Men Risen, you write about the Welsh Guards, and reading about them too, it's sort of like a military version of the family business, because these men come from quite often small towns in England. Their fathers, their grandfathers, in some cases, were members of the Welsh Guards, sometimes even the same brigade, and the sons follow the fathers into the family business almost.
Yeah, that's right, and that's the title sort of comes from that idea, really, because Major Sean Burchill, who was a company commander who was killed in action in June 2009, he sought to sort of build an esprit de corps within his company by talking about, "You are dead men risen." That's a quotation from a First World War poem. You are the successors of you know, your fathers and grandfathers who've come before you. And, I mean, the Welsh Guards these days, still very much like in the First World War, we had what were called PALS regiments from very small villages and towns in Britain, where you'd have literally sort of all the young men from the same community, from the same village, who would go out and would fight in the trenches together, and often, of course, would get sort of wiped out together. But yeah, 95% of the Welsh Guards are actually Welsh, and they're from these tiny little mining villages, many of them speak Welsh, and often they would sort of speak Welsh to each other, so the enemy couldn't listen in on the radio nets. So yeah, I mean, this was a very, very sort of tight band of brothers, if you like.
Start with Toby Harnden, who is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times of London, author of Dead Men Risen, an epic story of war and heroism in Afghanistan, tobyharnden.com on the web, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Here in the States, we heard some just absolutely ridiculous things said about Chris Kyle, and I mean, you can go back to the returning veterans of the Vietnam War for equally idiotic comments. Even one columnist called Kyle a racist because he, quote, assassinated brown people, which I never knew there was a quota system in killing terrorists, but apparently in that person's eyes there are. Are members of the military treated in kind by any of the public in England, or is this something just indicative to the liberal mind in America?
Well, it's interesting because I think in recent years, the left has tended to avoid sort of denigrating the troops, as happens, you know, extensively in Vietnam. But this felt to me like it's something new. For the first time, you had people openly sort of going for the soldier rather than, you know, criticizing the war and saying that they supported the troops. I mean, in Britain, we have a similar sort of phenomenon, that we have an all-volunteer military. So a very small segment of society that's bearing the sort of burden. And you have a lot of, certainly on the left, the war is very unpopular. And sometimes you do get troops being criticized, and snipers in particular often. I mean, the thing from Michael Moore, you know, about their cowards, they shoot people in the back. This is a very, very kind of old prejudice against snipers, that it's somehow underhand and sneaky. And, I mean, Chris Kyle shot people, most people in the front, and he was up against snipers from the other side. So it's a very sort of odd development, I find, to be saying that, you know, we sent these men to do these terrible things, horrible things. I mean, American Sniper and Dead Men Risen both portray war as it is, you know, hellish and awful and carrying a psychological and human cost for those who do it. And so, you know, I find it very striking that now we're at the stage where these people who've done so much and have, you know, at great cost to themselves, are now being sort of attacked for doing it. I find it, you know, disappointing development.
Which certainly doesn't help them in their attempt to return to some sort of normalcy after what they experienced, those who are lucky enough to come home. If you look at some of the statistics, and you mentioned this and write about this, unfortunately, too frequently, because, and, you know, to your credit, though, because unlike a lot of the war stories where it's the heroism and the success, you present the painful reality that some of these lives wind up having to face. And veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, suicide rates, depending on what study you want to look at, are anywhere between 40% to 60% higher than the general population, 22 a day, some studies say. And again, it's just a... You know, we add to that the inefficiencies of the Veterans Administration, where I've read stories where someone was told to wait 3 weeks to get an initial appointment, and if it wasn't for pushing by a congressperson, that might have been number 23 the suicides that day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was something I hadn't expected. I mean, I was out there in Helmand in southern Afghanistan with the Welsh Guards, and I guess when I got out there, I was a little bit of a skeptic about PTSD, sort of wondered what it really was, but it became part of the story. So I was out there with them. I followed them back, and I kept in touch with them over the years. And I mean, there were a number of casualties out there. you know, there was a command, the commanding officer was killed, a company commander was killed, a platoon commander was killed, amongst many other casualties. But what I hadn't quite expected was the invisible wounds of war to be sort of carried back. And there was one soldier in particular who sticks in my mind, a guy called Lance Sergeant Dan Collins, who was a real hero out there, never faltered, never flinched. He was shot in the back in his body armor. He was twice blown off his feet by IEDs, improvised explosive devices. And when he got back, he was sort of on the top of the world. And I remember almost feeling envious of him that, you know, this is a young man who sort of proved himself in battle and sort of stepped up to the plate, you know, when many others couldn't. But he descended into the depths. He used to have nightmares about the eyes of a soldier who died in his arms, who lost three limbs and sort of bled to death in his arms. He'd wake up and remember this kind of nightmare of these eyes following him. He had a comrade, Lance Corporal Dane Elson, who was blown to pieces beside him as well. And Dan couldn't live with it. Ultimately, he had some very patchy medical care, and he used to have to drive many hours for his appointment with the sort of psychiatric nurse. And he hanged himself on New Year's Day in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I consider him as much, you know, a casualty of the war in Afghanistan as anybody that actually died out there on the battlefield in 2009.
And that's what Toby does. He completes the picture of warfare. We see the coming home stories, the reunions at the airports, and for us, the viewer, that's the period, end of sentence, but that's just a common next paragraph for these men and women coming back from emotional as well as physical torture, which they volunteered to do, granted, and they knew what they were getting into, or in some cases they thought, but with the new enemy that the military heroes face today, there's just some stuff that ain't in the playbook, as they say. There is a number I want to pass along here, too. It's a National Veterans Crisis Hotline for those who are in need of help, seeking help, family members who want to steer their loved one in the right direction. Is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255, 24/7 service, confidential, and helps veterans in need. 1-800-273-8255. And again, Toby's book, Dead Men Risen, an epic story of war and heroism in Afghanistan. Cases of all, cases of many, and cases of a lot of lessons learned that will inspire and guide others in the steps to be taken ahead. TobyHarnden.com. On the web, he is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times of London. Toby Harnden, thanks so much for the way you give proper respect, pay tribute, and help all of us become more aware of the heroism and the courage that the members of the military have within them and are willing to give when they're really not mandated and obligated to do such things. And thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.